It is Thursday, the 22nd of August, and this is episode 179 of Digital Outbox. Hello, welcome to another episode. I'm Chris, joined by Ian. Hello, Ian.
Good evening, Christopher.
All good?
It's been a rubbish week, but yeah, all good.
Yeah, I've been a busy week, but I'm off to Spa tomorrow. I don't know if I told you.
You did not tell me.
Yeah. So oh. I got my paddock passes and I'm off to Spa for the next, for a long weekend.
Fine. I am insanely jealous.
So at some point I'm going to be one of those idiots behind a camera on the phone grinning. I've set that as my target. So look out for me on Sky. Maybe I'll get behind the BBC guys as well.
Is it live in BBC?
I don't know. Doesn't matter. They'll still be talking, won't they? Yeah, so that'll be fun. Anyway, so I'm pretty hyped, but I do have to get this podcast out of the way because I got
stuff to do.
Let's get it done. Ask FM we're going to start with today. So a continuation of our story. The bullying and harassment claims. Ask FM has sort of released what they're going to do, which... in effect, you can have a button to report bullying now, as well as other types of reporting you could do before. But they're also going to raise the visibility of the function to opt out of receiving anonymous questions. And it seems like these anonymous questions are the things that are causing the problems. And also they're going to limit the features more, that if you go on as an anonymous user, you can't do everything you want to do. And as soon as you do register, you have to do it via an email.
Yes, and it's just, and in some ways, I haven't learned, because they put out a thing saying, you know, the unfortunate teen that committed suicide a few weeks ago, and that 98% of the content on Ask FM was from her IP address, and the father's like, A, I don't believe it. B, tell us about the 2%. Tell us about the other stuff, and that's because that's what they want to get to the bottom of. Now, whether that's been handed to the police, still not very clear, but so it sounds like they're doing a decent thing, and they should have done it probably a long time ago.
Yeah, and they're going to have moderators as well, moderating some of these things. I guess it lives or dies on how good that is. There's part of me which thinks it is just a service, and you know they obviously didn't want this to happen, but they are just a service at the end of the day. It's not, you know, guns don't kill people; people kill people.
I thought you were going to go into rappers do.
Something like that. Yeah. Twitter related headlines. What's that all about?
They want to be a news service. You know, it's kind of clear. They want to be a news service. They want to be a TV service. They want to be your second screen and all that kind of good stuff. So this latest thing is that on a page where, you know, if you've put a tweet up or somebody's retweeted you, against that permalinked page, there's going to have related headlines. And okay. At first, this got a bit of controversy because people were saying, well, hold on, I won't have control over this.
No.
And so they were a bit concerned that it was going to be something like, you know, in a blog post, if the tweet was there, they were going to show related headlines. And if you didn't like, if you didn't like The Guardian and you didn't like, you know, Socialist Worker as two kind of sources and they started appearing.
Because under your name kind of thing.
Yeah, that it was all related to that. And I still think there's a bit of whiff about it. But at the end of the day, it's all about adding more context and more richness to the tweet.
Yeah, I didn't think it sounded that bad. So how it's going to work? So if I somehow made a tweet that happened to be very relevant, and the Guardian or some other reputable location, I guess it's only going to be key locations, embeds that onto their website for whatever reason, I guess via the proper Twitter embed as well.
Yes.
This is how they're getting the traction. Then the Guardian link might appear below my actual tweet, even if I don't really want it to be there.
Yeah, and there's a bit of an embed war at the moment because Facebook have just kind of started increasing the flexibility around embeds as well, because they're seeing it as a big market, and advertisers are seeing it as a big market.
Yeah. And I guess they really, and they want the official embeds to go in rather than just people copy pasting, so they actually get all that data and that linkage and that, you know.
Because the last 4 or 5 years, people have just really copied a tweet in.
Sure,
or they're taking a screenshot.
Yeah, you see on the BBC, tweets from whoever. So I guess whether they will get news networks to actually embed stuff, that'd be yet to be seen, but they're getting in there early, I guess, is what they're trying to do. Bradley Manning, he's now got his prison sentence, 35 years. He was the guy that released the information to WikiLeaks. That's right, isn't it?
Yep.
So he faced up to 90 years in prison, but they didn't find him guilty of aiding the enemy. Just 19 lesser counts.
Yes, but he's already been in prison for 3 years. And the bit I don't like is I'm trying to remember the guy's name, Julian Assange. So WikiLeaks are doing all of the tweets about, you know, Assange has been held in custody really for a year now. And it's like, he's chosen to sit in that blooming...
Ecuadorial.
Yeah, he's made that choice. Why don't you go and face the trial that you're accused of or the crime you're accused of instead of, you know, going into hiding and then saying, I'm actually a prisoner as well. He's not. And it's unfortunate that he's kind of made a name for himself off the back of Bradley Manning, who is now basically in jail for the rest of his life. Seemingly, I think they're saying today it's maybe about 8 or 9 years before he can actually try for parole. And whether they would get that because it is such a controversial crime, you know, it's such a big deal in America. But because he allegedly has hurt nobody, if you know what I mean. So whether parole would be more palatable in 8 years' time, who knows?
Mm.
And it was a slightly, it was on BBC, it's just on BBC before we came out tonight, or before we came on, sorry. But he's actually, we didn't come out. But unfortunately, Bradley Manning is no longer wanting to be called Bradley Manning. He is now a woman, and he wants to be called Chelsea Manning. It was just slightly kind of
why
surreal.
Would you choose Chelsea? I mean, you've got to do a better job than that, surely.
What would you choose?
I'm not sure. Let me think about that.
Damn.
So anyway, whether you agree or disagree with all the things that are going on, there are serious consequences and they're clamping down, I guess, and they're trying to frighten everyone off. I mean, some of his sentence was even put down to just, there to ward off other people doing similar thing.
Absolutely. And in a similar way, UK government and the UK criminal courts did the same round about some of the Facebook rioting a couple of years ago. You know, it was like basically putting up a post to say, let's go and riot, got people 5 years in jail.
The annoying thing is that, every time something is leaked, there's always something which is dirty and scandalous.
And some of the
some of it might be, serious, and if you leak it, then obviously it puts lives at risk. But nevertheless, there's always dirt that they're covering up.
And some of the footage of, like, you know, I remember that Apache.
Yes, exactly.
Shooting people running around. It was like, that is disgraceful.
There's all this nasty, dirty stuff that they're definitely hiding, and they're getting away with that on the pretense that, you know, we're not allowed to know these things. And it stinks sometimes.
Yes.
There you go. That was a bit of opinion, wasn't it? Keeping on the same trend, we've had more on the NSA files that the Guardian were asked to destroy. So this is our sort of latest leak, if you like, the Edward Snowden files. And this has been raging on for a while now. And so they were asked to destroy these digital things, and they did it with hacksaws and angle grinders and
well, it was bizarre.
Hammers.
So basically, the government, and it seemed like it was one of the kind of high-ranking officials within the government, were getting in touch with the Guardian and basically saying, like, enough's enough. You need to stop the stories. We're not happy that you've got this evidence, and we want you to physically destroy it. Which just seems to, like, I don't know, it's like, do they not understand how this data is held?
I mean, it's just
bizarre.
Destroyed some hard disks and some memory sticks, but they did point out to them that, you know, Guardian said, we are not the only people that have got this data. You know, what's the point of us destroying this? It's all around the world. It's not just with us. So is there any point to doing this? But nevertheless, they apparently still had to go and do it.
Well, they had to go and do it. They insisted that they wanted to see this physical destruction taking place. So in the basement of the Guardian, on Saturday, 20th of July, some of the staff smashed up some hard drives and computers watched by some technicians from GCHQ, which just was like, why? What? And they took notes and photographs, but they didn't take anything away. It just seems bizarre. It seems like a token kind of gesture.
Yeah, I mean, the story, though, that the radio news and stuff has been concentrating on is the fact that the Guardian journalist's partner was stopped at Heathrow Airport and interviewed for 9 hours under terrorism laws, the laws that were brought in for to supposedly allow them to protect us against terrorists, is now being used to stop journalist partners from, you know, and I guess just ward off and scare people.
And it's a fact that there doesn't seem to be any evidence to have actually caused this detention. That's been the controversial bit. There's been no evidence that and the government are saying it was nothing to do with us. The American government is saying it's nothing to do with us. UK government is saying it wasn't us. The police are just using the powers that they've got available. But
yeah, America and the UK government were fully aware that this was going to take place, because the police had been in contact with them both and said, and it just means that, you know, the journalist has been on some sort of watch list for a long, you know, since it's happened, and everything about his life's been dug into by these same snoopy and quiet and secretive powers that be, and say the government are fully aware, and obviously by not, you know, interjecting, they obviously agree with it, basically. As much as, you know, they come out and say, you know, we don't tell the police what to do, they certainly do.
Yep. And, well, the kind of nasty bit with this was that the kind of law he was detained under was brought in 2000, and it was purely aimed at terrorists. So basically, I think it applies to airports and ports, and means that the normal protection for suspects in the UK don't apply. And that's also to journalists. So it just looks like this was the only place they could do this.
That's right. You get no protection. You're not guaranteed legal counsel. You can get stopped for 9 hours, and not, if you don't cooperate, then you can be sent to jail. And yeah, it just stunk, basically.
I don't know if you noticed, there was a few tech people kind of retweeted it as well, but the image that The Guardian put out was of this broken MacBook Pro and its innards, which also had a PCI card, which doesn't exist in the MacBook Pro.
Which was a stock photo.
No, well, seemingly they'd gone just from bits on the floor and put it next to the MacBook Pro.
Right.
Allegedly. Idiot.
Yes. There we go. More stuff, more outcome from this. Grok Law. So this was a legal news website, a collaborative site where people could email and collaborate to sort of generate news stories around what's going on in the law and you know, cases and stuff like that.
Yes.
But the founder, Pamela Jones, has come out and said, I can't do this anymore because I cannot offer anonymity to the people who are contributing, because everyone's looking at everyone's emails. You know, there's someone out there, you know, making me feel like I'm being watched over my shoulder, and I don't like it, and I can't do what this site set out to do, so I'm going to stop.
Yep. And see, I'll be honest, I've never heard of the website, but there was certainly a lot of press about it, and it's got a lot of awards, and it's been going for a long time now. And as you said, it's all around this, they can't protect anonymity anymore. And that was one of the key, you know, kind of fundamentals of the site, that contributors could talk and discuss, and anonymity was guaranteed. But that was from a site perspective. Obviously, with this, you know, allegedly the US surveillance looking at everything, they can no longer do it. So they've had to shut it down, which is,
I mean,
is amazing.
I guess it was an essay that she put out saying why she'd shut it down wasn't just that, you know, she couldn't guarantee that. She just said, when someone's looking over your shoulder who's not supposed to be looking over your shoulder, it makes you act differently. And she said she just didn't like that feeling, and she's going to she's trying to give up the internet, but it's hard. It's hard.
And I've seen, to be honest, mostly kind of Apple fanboy, I've seen lots of people tweeting saying moving from Gmail, moving to Secure Mail, moving to this, moving to that. And it's like, it's not Google. You know, it's like there's like most of the companies.
You know, that secure email service that's, you know, designed, like we talked about last week, designed purely around offering secure email. They're saying they had to shut down because they cannot give that service because GCHQ or whoever comes along, the NSA comes along and says, right, let us go into your service, please. Don't tell anyone. You're not allowed to tell anyone, but we're going to have free rein to look at everything that comes through your service. Go and store it.
And I can understand if the argument was I'm not comfortable with using a free service, you know, and you know, advertisers, you know, gaining information. And if you want to go for a paid service, and then that's fine. But don't pick and Google from a security aspect. I think that's a bit harsh.
Yeah, I mean, say Microsoft has been, they've even been more honest than most, I think, about how much they do conform and comply, and how much their Hotmail service is open to all these agencies pre-encryption. So.
Yeah, basically, if you've got Hotmail, just don't even bother with a password. Just leave it open.
Okay, Facebook and six phone companies, are they going to try and... they're launching internet.org with the aim of hoping to get everyone around the globe online.
Yeah. Cynical, you read this and thought, yep, there's not many people signing up to Facebook at the moment. How do
business
we get these
opportunities?
Yes. So they've got three major initiatives. Every time I see that, I think, tentpoles. And... so making access affordable through cheaper smartphones and working with mobile operators to extend internet access to underserved. I read that there and I read it as undeserved. And I was like, that can't be right. Like, that's not right. Undeserved communities, underserved communities. To be honest, that's like three, if you're listening again, Scotstoun and Glasgow is underserved right now. So looking at using data more efficiently as well. Also trying to compress and look at network efficiency. And the third one was helping businesses drive access to grow mobile businesses sustainably. And it all sounds good, but I don't know.
It's a bit like, helping out foreign countries with big loans, isn't it? At the end of the day, we're going to call the loan back in at some point and that screws everyone over.
I would have much rather have seen internet.org launching and it was all about, a secure and safe, online browsing without anybody snooping over your shoulder. That would have got a bit more like, woohoo.
Yeah, but that nevertheless, I was going to say it can't hurt, but it could. We'll see.
Yeah, and maybe we should just mention the partners. So it's Facebook alongside Samsung, Ericsson, MediaTek, Nokia still going, Opera and Qualcomm. So, yeah, great.
Well, I'm sure... something will happen that will make it come back in our news at some point. Google have started using, they bought Waze not too long ago, which was a sort of socially sourced mapping and map data, basically. And they've started integrating some of their features into Google Maps. So in Google Maps now on the iOS and Android, you can see incident reporting, road closures, construction works, things like accidents. And that's across quite a lot of countries, including UK.
Yes, and this is good because a lot of the time you see these acquisitions. This was $1 billion, and at the time we said, is it just protection? Is it just to stop Facebook or Apple getting it? But it's nice to see that they're actually integrating the services, and we should end up with a richer service, no matter what platform you use.
And yesterday I was, maybe 2 days ago now, I was caught in a traffic jam and they were extremely accurate about the start and end of the incident and also the time it would take to get through. So it's working, I think. They're certainly, for me, the most accurate. I mean, when you listen to traffic reports on the radio now, they go, I'm just going to my satellite data to see where the holdups are. And I'm pretty convinced they're just going to Google Maps and seeing where the red light, the red areas are.
You might be right. And because I'm amazed at how I mean, it is down to like small streets now that you're getting, it's marked as red and other ones are marked as like yellow and green and you do check. I have checked and it's like, that's spookily close.
Yep. No, absolutely.
It's very, very good.
And it's all crowdsourced data and now as well as this Waze sourced stuff as well. So. But Waze are also, have now got Google Street View into their applications as well.
Yes, because I do know a couple of people that are just Waze only users, love it. So I think having that street view information will be a big plus.
Certainly will. Gamescom's been going on.
Games.
So this is really the massive now build up to the release of the next gen. And I guess game companies still trying to get you to see that their current gen's relevant. So as normal, we'll split it out into the different companies. So we'll start with Microsoft. So Fable is one of the Xbox One exclusives. So they were pimping and touting that. And they've sort of gone, where it's been a single player game up until now, they've kind of gone down the four player co-op route. So, and having some of the archetypes that you'd expect to see in an RPG. So having a tank and a ranged player and a damage dealer and a healer. So, I didn't get enough feel from what I saw about whether that, it's going to be a good direction. Does it mean you have to have four friends to play it and that kind of thing? So we'll see what that goes. But they're still, even though they've lost what's-his-chops, Lionhead still know how to put together a good game.
Peter Molyneux?
Yeah, that one. What's-his-chops?
but it's a, and also this one is like, I mean, they're saying it's online focused and it's a beta will launch next year, so it sounds like it's still a good way off.
Yes, certainly from the screens they were showing, very much a you know, a video rather than gameplay.
Yeah.
Cobalt. What's that all about?
I have no idea.
No. So Cobalt from Mojang, something they talked about. They did harp on about independent developers. So they got a lot of stick in the last generation about how much it costs for an independent developer to put out on Xbox Arcade. And also the restrictions that were put onto that, whether it be file size restrictions, which I know were relaxed, but they also had you know, access to different servers and stuff like that.
And they couldn't access the full
gambit. They couldn't do connects and all sorts of things.
Yeah, and I think, I'm sure it was $30,000 an update, something crazy.
Far
like
too
that,
much to sort just of like, justify, yeah.
You know, as an independent, you wouldn't even, well, you just couldn't do it. You're just like, well, no.
Yeah, even Fez, which obviously sold a lot, they were moaning, they struggled. Yeah. But it looks like they've listened. They've said they've listened. And I think we touched on this a bit, but this is sort of reiterates that as an independent developer, you will get full access to everything that a full-on developer will get. They're also allowed to make updates without cost.
It's for free. Yeah.
So basically, it sounds like they're making their environment a lot more attractive to these guys. Microsoft also, they're not willing to say who is and who is not an independent developer. They're not going to get involved in that. Pretty much, if you say you're an independent developer, I guess you are, as long as you're not called EA.
Yeah, pretty much. But what they're also doing is they're basically saying you can register for this independent developers at Xbox program, and you can register, and if accepted into the program, you'll get 2 development kits for free.
Yeah, these aren't consoles. These are actually sort of equivalent computers, effectively. So that's another, you know, great. Sounds like a good initiative.
It is. And the one thing that we touched on probably 2-3 weeks ago was this idea that the Xbox One will allow you to publish at some point. But seemingly that's a kind of roadmap idea. So it's not something you'll be able to do at launch. And that wasn't mentioned in this initial phase. So this is like a kind of, I don't know, I guess we'll see it next year after, that anybody can, you know, use an Xbox One and publish games.
Good stuff. Hang on, I've got to find it. Call of Duty Ghosts. So that we're going to have dedicated servers.
Finally.
Yes. So this is where this server farm's coming in, whatever they're going to call it. I can't remember what they've called it now, but
they just call it, I think just call it
the cloud, whatever.
The power of the cloud.
Yeah. So this massive block of computers they've got available are going to give us some dedicated stuff. So they talked about blitz mode. Effectively, you've got to get to a defended location, and as soon as you get in that location, you score a point, effectively. Nothing truly revolutionary. I think everything's nice. And
Call of Duty, I think we covered it last week. It just looks more of the same. I think just a bit more destructible.
Yes.
And I can just see them in Battlefield merging. Obviously, they'll never merge, but the kind of, as each one does something subtly, slightly different,
they end up with the same kind of thing. I mean, they're already fairly similar now, aren't they? They're getting more and more so. But you'll also get bonus content first on Xbox One. Whoop. So you get to buy things first, probably by a matter of a few days. Big announcement. Every pre-order is going to come of an Xbox One is going to come with FIFA 14.
Yes,
and they've also reduced the price to $429 in the UK now.
It was $429.
Was it? Okay.
It always was $429.
Okay. I wish really that they just lowered that price and didn't give us free FIFA.
Yeah, because I think if they said it was like, but I agree with you, but at the same time, I think if you really want FIFA, people are just going to buy it in the 360. So in some ways, it's because I think most of the companies announce some sort of buyback, not buyback, but cheap upgrade option. Mm. You know, so if you buy FIFA or Call of Duty on 360, give us $10 and we'll give you it for the new one. We'll give you it for Xbox One.
It's just a shame it's not a selection of games you can choose from as your free game.
Absolutely.
That's my bugbear, really.
For me, FIFA
doesn't have any interest.
No. And it's a digital download as well. So it's
you've not got a box, you just...
You've not got a box, so you can't sell it on, you can't trade it on.
To be honest, they're never worth anything when you sell on anyway, are they? So.
No, but you're going to get a code and it'll be some crazy 30 gig download.
Yeah.
So
enjoy that 2 weeks later.
Whoop.
Launch day games obviously confirmed for Xbox. So Assassin's Creed 4, Battlefield 4, Call of Duty, Crimson Dragon. Crimson Dragon was a Panzer Dragon Autoros, I think, was the old one.
Yeah.
Dead Rising 3, FIFA 14, everyone's going to get that. Fighter Within. None of these. Forza Motorsport 5, obviously a biggie. So I think we've mentioned all the biggies now, really. The rest are just meh. Need for Speed Rivals.
Watch Dogs, but that's multi-platform.
Yeah, okay. What's the... I can't remember the name of that Ubisoft game that we were waiting for.
The Division?
Yeah, that's the one.
Yeah. Watch Dogs is
one.
Well.
That's not a launch game.
No. I mean, Watch Dogs was kind of shown at E3 last year and got everybody talking because it was like, that's next gen. But it is coming out for current gen platforms as well. The demos from Gamescom looked really good. And it was just like, oh. But it's one of these things. I think it could demo really well, but yeah, play badly.
Yeah, exactly. So of these launch games then, I mean, what twists your fancy? Because, I mean, I'm looking at that list and thinking, I'm struggling to find three, really.
So I guess...
And that's just because, don't forget, that's just because I'm cynical and now...
Yep. And I'm just thinking back to, you know, like when Xbox and Xbox 360 came out. And, you know, I'm thinking the 360 straight away, there was PGR.
Yeah.
And but then I'm struggling to think what else. I think there was a Call of Duty.
Yeah, because we had... Dark, Agent Dark. I can't remember the name.
Oh, Perfect Dark.
Yes. But that was didn't get good reviews at all. In fact, wasn't that good. But...
No, because I ended up... It was PGR and there was Call of Duty. And... I can't even remember what else I picked up at the start. Whereas for the Xbox One, I can remember it was Halo. That was the kind of game. It was like,
that was why everyone bought the console. Right?
Yeah, and I think it was Dead or Alive. It was the kind of fighting game at the time.
Yes, looking
down this list, I would have bought FIFA.
And Wrecked. Do you remember Wrecked? Because that was a good demo. Because you could tell your mates. It was just a driving game where you got to crash into everything. It was the first kind of game where you could destroy everything.
I don't think I got that.
Yeah, it was. It just looked. It was visual porn.
Hmm.
Sony were there as well, obviously.
Well, just before you go on, I was just going to say, like, games wise, I would pick up FIFA 14.
Oh yeah,
so I'm getting it anyway.
Yeah,
definitely Forza.
Yeah,
I'm quite looking forward to that. And then the rest, probably Call of Duty, Battlefield. But then if you buy both of those, you're not.
Which one
be able
do you play?
I know.
You know, it gets confusing then, doesn't it? Because they're both the same kind of game. You can't really play both in parallel. No.
And the rest, I mean, Rise looked amazing, but just looks like QuickTime events, so I'm just not interested.
Yeah.
You know, I might pick up Zumba Fitness, World Party.
Sony have also said they exist. Gran Turismo 6, but PS3, so they're trying to keep you interested in that. Brands Hatch, we like Brands Hatch.
You might like Brands Hatch, I think it's all right.
It's a brilliant place.
No, so you're buying Gran Turismo 6?
No. No,
neither am I, because my PS3 is in the attic.
See, mine might as well be. It's just a dust collector.
And that's why I moved it. It was like, ugh.
I haven't got a separate Blu-ray, so I have to keep it there just in case I fancy a Blu-ray night. Vita, they're trying to keep that relevant as well. They've dropped the price, $169. I guess for the bit of hardware that it is, that's a really good price.
It is, but I think for Vita to succeed, it should have launched at that price. I know it's hard because they couldn't launch at that price, but they had to. They you can't come in. Was it 230, 240 when it launched?
I don't know. It just felt a bit too much, didn't it? Especially in the phone arena. But they've also announced some games. So Fez is going to come out on it. Starbound, Velocity.
And they also demoed quite a lot of this, you know, using Vita as a controller for the PS4. Mm. So they're obviously trying to say, you know, pick up the PS4 and also, why don't you pick up a cheap Vita as well? I can't see many people doing that.
And for the very reason that probably most games won't support it in a very good way, because why would you? Because no one's going to have one.
Yeah. And I guess that's the argument round about, you know, lots of people are saying just unbundle the Kinect, Microsoft, but they're desperately trying to get developers saying everybody's going to have one, so just code against it.
And they're right. I think that, you know, they probably, and that is probably why the Xbox console is that much more expensive. It probably is that one bit of hardware. But maybe they felt if it's not an all or nothing, you know, it's an all or nothing thing, let's get everyone.
I think price-wise, and I know this is going to sound daft, price-wise, I feel they're the same. Because with the, you now get your headset bundled in, you've got the camera and the Kinect, even if you'll never use it, it's there. So you can't, and it's one of these things, I think, I mean, Edge in particular just can't back down from their statement from, you know, six, 7 weeks ago. So even like in their wrap up at Gamescom was so biased, it was unbelievable.
Yeah.
And it just, and it was like still a massive price difference.
So 349 versus 429.
So they were saying, even with FIFA, a massive price difference, it's like, yeah, but if FIFA's 60 quid and I'm not getting a camera and I'm not getting a headset, there's not actually nothing in it, really.
Mm. So what PlayStation 4 games have you got?
Lots of independent. So they really are trying to hammer home the PS4 and the kind of Sony ecosystem is a place to be for independence. So they've almost at every show they've done this year, they've kind of brought out more and more independents and got everybody really excited.
Sadly, that just means you don't have any names to cling on to. I mean, the thing is, I moan about all these repeated games that we get. So actually, I should be celebrating the fact that I don't have a clue what all these games are.
So, I mean, there's things like, you know, Wasteland Kings, which obviously we know nothing about, but it's the next game from the guy that did Ridiculous Fishing, which was a fantastic game on iOS. You know, so it's things like that. I was like, ooh, interesting.
As long as I guess they realise that, you know, these independent developers, they realise that, I guess, console, you want a bit more depth and longevity, don't you? Phone games, you tend to be able to chuck away.
Yep, Ridiculous Fishing, I loved, was one of my picks, but after a week and a half, I'm done. Mm. You know, apart from there's one fish missing somewhere that I didn't pick up, but
it doesn't bug you enough to care about it yet.
Nah. And there was things like, so there was Rhyme, which is from Spanish developer Tequila Works, and it looked much like Ico. So if you, I don't know if you ever played PlayStation Ico on PlayStation 2, which was an absolute classic. So again, it was like, ooh, that looks interesting. And there was the Everybody's Gone to the Rapture. So this is from the people behind Dear Esther, which got a lot of good praise. So again, but the video you saw was a 1 minute video that told you nothing about the game, and everybody was like, whoa, whoop, whoop, but there's nothing there, and it's next year.
Yeah, so it's clearly too early in development to really know. I guess the point is, I should go and dig out the videos, and, you know, if you're to go and sort of get an impression of what's coming out, because, say, it's hard to list names of games that we can't really put too much on meat on the bones, really.
One that you can. One thing I will say, the actual live broadcast was awful. Instead of just zooming in on the actual game when the video was playing, whoever was directing it decided to like pan around the audience with the video playing in the background, a tiny screen that you couldn't really see.
Fantastic. Just the way around you want. It's like they got the wrong way around.
Yep. One game that everybody will know, Shadow of the Beast.
How exciting.
So Shadow of the Beast.
No remakes ever excite me.
So, do you remember Shadow of the Beast?
I'd never played it.
So, Shadow of the Beast it's got history for me. Shaq loved it, and I thought it was just like the most vacuous, horrible graphics demo ever. It was from Psygnosis. It was all this parallax scrolling.
I was
going to
say, was it the side-scrolling beat 'em up type thing?
Yeah. And it was just like gameplay was rubbish, but it did look really nice.
I remember parallax scrolling. It made everyone go excited.
It was like the mode 7 mode in the SNES that gave you that F-Zero type effect and all that kind of stuff, the mode 7 chip. And Shadow of the Beast is coming out, and they announced that, and it was like, no, that's not something that you can boast about before the console gets launched. That's not one of them.
No, it's I say remakes never work, even if the remakes have got good games in the past.
So we've covered it already. They showed the remote play feature, but they also they've got a share button on their controller, on that ginormous widescreen controller.
Yeah.
And you can now, you'll be able to share to Twitch. So Twitch we've covered before, and Microsoft had already said you got that in the Xbox One. So it's ticking the box time.
Yeah, it's you know, it's tit for tat, isn't it? They're chasing each other now a bit.
But what we did get was a release date.
We did. So it's November. And it was mid-November, wasn't it? No, it's towards the end of November for us.
29th.
So mid-November, 15th in US, 29th over here. As we said, £349.
And they also did a program, you know, if you buy PlayStation 3 versions of specific games, you'll be able to pick up a digital edition for a discounted price. They didn't go into...
No, so they said large discount, but that could mean anything, couldn't it?
Yep, and they mentioned that it will be applied to Call of Duty Ghosts, Watch Dogs, Assassin's Creed... 4 and Battlefield 4. So the big titles that obviously these publishers are saying, we're really worried about these. You know, we expect big sales, but nobody's going to buy them twice.
No, and they're right, because say they're desperately trying to keep the old console alive while we're waiting. Yep. But we've been in such a quiet period that these guys need their balance sheets to be balanced a bit.
Absolutely.
Because, you know,
I've got no intention of buying FIFA, even though I buy it every year, because I've really enjoyed it. I'll get it in November on Xbox One, and I'll play GTA.
Yep. Yeah, that's it. I hope GTA lasts long enough.
So, and they also said 33 games by December, end of December. And again, but much the same. It was, you know, Call of Duty, Skylanders, Need for Speed Rivals, Battlefield 4, Madden.
All sounds very familiar.
So Killzone is the kind of one of the unique ones. Drive Club's another unique one. Knack, which doesn't really, you know, do much, but all the rest were the same.
Yeah, but so the big headlines are all the same, but then that's because we're getting caught up in the headline games, whereas we should really concentrate on these indie ones and have a look if there's anything interesting, I guess. There you go. That was the kind of news from Gamescom.
I will confess, however, I am thinking that I might be buying both.
Yeah, it's one of those things. It just eventually happens, doesn't it? I never thought I'd have both this time. I have, even though I wish I hadn't.
I'm the same. What a fool.
And I'm pretty sure I'll still end up with an Xbox, even though I'm actually umming and ahhing whether I will. I probably will. There we go. That's the end of the news, the end of our podcast. Unless you got a pick.
No, because you've got to run. You've got to go to Spa.
I have. I've got to leg it. So if you want to find out more, you can do www.digitaloutbox.com. Email info@digitaloutbox.com. Twitter and Skype is Digital Outbox. I'm on Twitter as Cheesy UK. And my blog for all my racing stuff is academyracer.co.uk. Where can we find you, Ian?
My blog is iand.net. And Twitter is Sweeper. And according to The Verge, UK Prime Minister David Cameron reportedly authorised Guardian hard drive destruction.
There we go.
What a cock.
Angle grind those hard disks. Good stuff. And speak to you next week. Goodbye.
Goodbye.
I bet he felt really powerful.
But only if he was using the angle grinder.
Maybe he did. Maybe that's the bit they're not allowed to tell us.
Maybe he was watching that. Who was it that did the Satisfaction video? And it was all the models that had like powerful saws and all the bits.
No, I can't remember. It was a dance song, wasn't it?
Yeah. Was it Benny Benassi or something? Something like that.
I hope this is going to be another one of those.
It's Benny Benassi. Satisfaction.
Think of all that junk that's up in your brain. Brain spew.